I once almost got thrown out of Arlington Stadium for throwing zingers at Cecil Espy. Indeed.
Yay!
Do we have a sponsor?
No.
Okay, great.
Stuff.
All right, well, we need to get right to this. This is a special treat for me. Hopefully, other people will enjoy it. Or maybe it's totally self-indulgent and we'll never do anything like this again. But one of the perks, as you guys know, of this job is that you get to talk to cool people.
Yes.
And so, as a new wave kid, one of my new wave heroes was Jim Reed, who is the lead singer of Jesus and Mary Chain.
Man, they got past me. Like, that was mid to late 80s?
Yeah, they came in, I think, like 85. Their first album was Psycho Candy. Then they had Darklands. Then they had Automatic, and that had Blues from a Gun, and it also had the song that was later redone by the Pixies that the name is escaping me right now. But they were big in my world, and they are playing at the Granada Theater next Tuesday, October 25th. And so the folks at Granada reached out and asked if I would like to talk to Jim. And I was very intimidated because he has the reputation of being rather surly, but he was a sweet Scottish gentleman. And this is what it sounded like when I talked to him.
Hello.
Hello, is this Jim?
Hi, is that Dave?
This is Dave. How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Wonderful. Okay, so if we could go all the way back to the beginning, is it true, the rumor, that you and William had to flip a coin to see who was going to have to sing?
That actually is true. We flipped that coin and I lost. So we didn't want to be the singer. I didn't want to be the singer, neither did he, but somebody had to do it. So we flipped a coin and I lost. But yeah, that's how it all went down. And a few months later, when he sort of started to realize that the singer got like a lot more attention, he was like, "Yeah, we've got to do best of three, you know." And I was like, "No way, no way, Jose. So we're not doing it that way."
What about the origin of the name? Was it just kind of to be a provocateurs, or what's the story there?
It just came out of nowhere. I mean, William came up with it. We had a bunch of different names that we were considering, most of which, you know, were dreadful, really, and don't really want to mention them. But we were stuck because we had our first show coming up, and we still didn't have a name for the band. So, and it was like, and we were going to do posters to advertise our show, and we didn't know what to write on them. So it was like, right, come on, we need a name, we need it now. And he just kind of blurted it out, like, Jesus and Mary Chain. Obviously, he'd been thinking about it. It was one of those things where, you know, as soon as you hear it, you think, that's the worst. Wait a minute, hold on, that's actually the best name that I've ever heard. So it seemed right. It didn't seem like any other band's name. And so that was it. We stuck with it. We knew it was going to ruffle a few feathers, but I mean, that's what we're there to do, really, you know.
When you also, as you were discovering what kind of band you wanted to be, it seemed like you and your brother really gravitated to like the 60s songwriting, the Shangri-Las, the Phil Spector stuff, but then you added the layer of feedback over the top. Was that kind of your conscious decision of trying to blaze a new path or create a new genre?
Well, I mean, at the time, we were listening to quite a lot of 60s and 70s music, and we were kind of equally into noise music, like bands that were extreme guitar-wise, noise-wise, and also other bands that were just like, you know, girl bands from the 60s, Shangri-Las and stuff. And we thought, why isn't anybody sort of put these two things together? And that's what we set out to do. We set out to do, a kind of cross between, you know, just like straight ahead pop music with something a bit more like sort of in your face, avant-garde noise, stuff like that. And that was it. And in essence, that is Psycho Candy.
Right. And so, yeah, you, the name Psycho Candy, the first record, you had the reputation of getting in fights with fans or with bar staff. You would smash your equipment. Later on, you had Reverence, which was banned by the BBC. Did you guys revel in being rebellious? Was this something conscious?
It wasn't. I mean, it's not that difficult to upset people in the music business. I mean, it's practically like a Sunday school out there. So anybody that, that does anything a little bit jarring tends to get talked about and noticed. It wasn't, at the beginning we were pushing some buttons, but it really, it wasn't what it was all about. It was all about the music with us and, with a certain attitude, The music that we grew up listening to wasn't music that was like, that was meant to be easily digested. It was like slightly jagged, and that's what we wanted to do. You know, sort of like the Stooges and Suicide and punk music and Bowie and, all of that kind of stuff. I mean, we wanted to make music that had that kind of impact and... we weren't really interested in making kind of like sort of really easygoing sort of music, elevator music, really. That wasn't really what we set out to do.
So you guys split in 98, 99, and then you returned at Coachella in 2007. I was at that show, and I remember it feeling like a cultural moment. You had Scarlett Johansson come out and sing with you guys. Was it a triumphant return for you as well?
It was kind of difficult for me. I mean, I was terrified at that show. I was shitting myself. It was it was the first show that I'd ever played sober in my life. So I'd been sober for a few years by then, and it was terrifying. I just didn't know whether I could do it or not, and I found out. I mean, I could do it. It was very, very scary, but once I got it over and done with, and I realized I didn't have to be wasted to play a show, then yeah, that was kind of like strangely, it was like a light bulb moment, really.
One thing I do remember about that show, one of your stances, one of your kind of affectations as the front man would be to crouch next to your brother's amplifier as if you were letting all the sound waves just wash over you. Have you experienced a great deal of hearing loss, or do you protect your hearing, or is he blasting your eardrums?
I have got, one of my ears is noticeably damaged. I can hear okay. I tell you what, William, his hearing's pretty bad. I mean, he's like, you have a conversation with him, it's like, he's like, you'll just say anything. Whoa! And he's like, oh, f***. It's standing in front of that amp for all of those years has had taken, it's taken a toll on his hearing, definitely.
I mentioned appearance of Scarlett Johansson. You've also obviously collaborated with Hope Sandoval, Sky Ferreira, Isabel Campbell. How do you get all of these great female singers to work with you?
You just ask them. It's that simple. I mean, you just think, well, wouldn't it be good if, Scarlett, I mean, we were rehearsing for that show, and somebody said that she was doing an album, and it was going to be coming out on, the same label, some Warner's label that we were on. We sort of thought, well, why don't we ask her if she wants to do, just like Honey, just with the connection with Lost in Translation and stuff like that. And, if you don't ask, you're never going to know. So we asked. There was a channel that we had to get a message through, and she was up for it. So that was good, and it worked out. I mean, generally, we just kind of, you just think, who would be good for this song? And it's usually as simple as a couple of phone calls. So that's what
So as you look back over your career and your catalog, what are some of the personal highlights that you have, or maybe things that you feel are underappreciated or underrated?
Well, I think Monkey is definitely underrated. I mean, it nearly killed us making that record. We weren't getting along, and it was a hard record to make, but it, you know, I don't think the music suffered. We suffered. The music didn't, and I think it's, you know, it's probably my favorite Mary Jane record, but nobody bought it. Nobody cares. So, yeah, that's sad. I wish more people would listen to Monkey.
Do you think it's strange, you know, we talked about how you were in the 80s echoing the 60s, and in the early 2000s seemed like people were echoing the 80s. Now we're into the 2020s, people are echoing the early 2000s, and people are rediscovering your music all the time. Do you ever think about the cyclical nature and how people are discovering you all the time?
Well, I mean, that, in essence, that's what rock and roll is. It's a cycle, you know. It's you know, if you stay tuned long enough, you'll see the point where you come in, and that's what it's all about. And it's always been that way, you know. The Stones, you know, was Muddy Waters, you know, Chuck Berry, you know, and you know, with us, it was like listening to the Stooges and the Velvets and all. I mean, that's how it works. Yeah, and what you do is you try and update what you've been listening to from the past. If you just copy it, then there's no point of it. Because, you know, like, you know, what's the point? If you're a young band now and you've heard the Mary Jane and you make a record that just sounds exactly like us, then what was the point of that? But the thing to do is to learn lessons from music from the past. And it's okay to plunder, you know, that's what it's all about. But put something of yourself into it.
You guys were working on a record. Did you go back and pick up where you left off, or did you start from the beginning again? And have you guys changed your sound or changed your ethos moving forward?
It's difficult to say right now because we've recorded quite a lot of songs, but not completely, if you know what I mean. We've started a lot of songs. So they could still go in any direction that we choose. We're kind of toying around with like synthesizers and stuff like that, but who knows? You know, and it's kind of difficult because like William lives in Arizona now, and I live in England, so you know, the band's scattered all over the place. So it's kind of difficult to get it together to make this record. We started just before COVID said, and you know, it's like we kind of have to find the time to keep it going. We will get there. It will be out next year. There will be a new Mary Jane record, and it'll be a good one.
Brother throughout, there's the two of them, basically Jesus and Mary Jane. And it was a fun discussion. I don't know how interesting you guys found it, but it was a thrill for me.
I enjoyed it, and I could listen to a guy with that Scottish of an accent talk for quite a while about just about anything.
Right?
Yeah. Where did they max out playing? Were they AAC at the time or whatever,
no,
Reunion Arena?
The last time I saw them come through Dallas...
When they were big.
Yeah. I don't know, because I didn't see them back then. I did see them at the Factory here in Deep Ellum the last time they came in. And the only other times I've seen them is, like, at festivals.
Yeah.
You know, at Coachella, or they played, like, North by Northwest or something in Denton one time. So, I don't know where they maxed out. They may have just played like the Bronco Bowl or something back in the day. But they are very culturally relevant. He mentioned the Lost in Translation appearance of Just Like Honey.
Yeah.
And that was kind of their inroad with Scarlett Johansson. So, yes, I'm very excited. Tuesday at Granada Theater. If you see me there, let's have a shot.